Gov2O Expo is our first multi-track large conference that we're having here in the D.C. area. O'Reilly Media is known for its other conferences such as Web 2.0 Expo and Summit, as well as OSCON, which is the open source conference. So we're looking here at this great opportunity to bring technology and government together and really have a great discussion about what's going on, because it's a very popular, interesting space. And the conference itself is at the end of May, from May 25th to the 27th in Washington, D.C., and registration is absolutely still open. So we would love to have just a really great, diverse crowd of people who are interested in not just the federal government, but also we'll be bringing in case studies from across the country and even around the world.
A lot of times, especially in D.C., acronyms and buzzwords get thrown around a lot. What exactly is Gov 2.0 for someone maybe coming in outside, or maybe someone who's part of, you know, a local community and wants to get active and wants to be part of this 2.0 community but doesn't really know kind of what it is?
Well, that's a great point. So in the technology community, acronyms and buzzwords get bounced around quite a bit as well. But what we're looking at here with Gov 2.0, we're just, it's an umbrella term for this next generation of government, the one that accepts and uses technology as one of its main tenets. But it's not just the technology, right? Technology is easy and tools are easy to use. It's also people and the collaboration between governments at every level, from federal down to your city government, with the people. And this is happening easily with social media and more interaction on the web and through the web. But it's also about looking at government as this great provider of information and open data, and what that can be used and how it can be used to really further every American's and, you know, global citizen's desire to have more information about their government at any given time. We're talking about, yes, I mean, some people are focused on, say, campaign finance donations, but then we're also looking at really simple things like, where are there brownfields? So when I buy a house, I know that the surrounding land is not contaminated with certain wastes. That kind of information is all kind of locked up in the government, and we're trying to advocate a policy of looking and adopting open data so that the citizens can also have access to this data to make better and more informed decisions.
Obviously, President Obama has his open government directive. Have you seen any changes since that has, since agencies were directed by the president now to open up all this data? Have you seen any changes yet, or is it still in the preliminary stages?
Well, that's interesting. So a year ago, when President Obama took office, one of the first things that he did was sign this Transparency Collaboration Participation Memo. So really, it was the start of an idea of, like, let's actually talk to and involve citizens and talk about how we all can make government better. And it's a year later, he had the agencies actually create open government plans, and those were just released in April. So what it did was really just kind of give everyone like a good understanding of where the agencies are and how they understand open government and how they will apply these ideas of open data, communicating with citizens, or really just collaborating, because it's a back and forth effort, as well as transparency. So at the federal level, we're seeing some progress, which is fantastic. I would suggest that everyone take a look at what NASA is doing. They have a very clear mission-driven agency that they are really focusing on letting people know when they open up this space data, for example. It's a fascinating amount of scientific data that kids can use in education settings and really anyone can use, because this is all of our data, right? That's the premise behind government data. It's actually government people, citizens, paid for the data through the taxes, and the government has collected it. So what we're seeing at the federal level is almost, it's great, everyone's making great strides, but the exciting work is really happening at the city and state level, where people are a bit more nimble, and elected officials tend to be reelected more than just two terms. So, for example, at the Massachusetts Department of Transportation, we're seeing opening of data for subway timetables. You can say, well, that's a really minor thing, and it is, but then they start to open up the data for the bus tables, and they did it for real time. So that meant that you could go and you would know what time the bus is coming, so you could actually plan your day. You could take control of the day and realize the bus is 10 minutes away, I have time to grab that next cup of coffee and still make my bus without having to guess whether or not the bus just drove by.
Yeah, as someone who misses the bus all the time, I wish we had that here. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and it's such a simple thing. I mean, this is what we're talking about. It's just these simple little changes that really just make everyone's lives better.
So let's talk a little bit, again, getting back to a little bit to the jargon. You have Gov 2.0, and there's, of course, we're the Fed Cloud blog. We do cloud computing, and, you know, part of open government is, you know, putting data in the cloud. But in doing some of these interviews, the security aspect comes up. Obviously, a bus schedule is something that's public anyway. But I think some federal agencies are a little bit nervous about cloud computing and some of this open data stuff because not all of their data is for public consumption. So maybe you can speak to a little bit about that and some of the nervousness that goes around with data security.
Sure. And just to preface, I'm not an expert, but what I do know is I am a consumer, right? So when we think about using the internet in general, we sort of have to think of it as one big cloud anyway. So for example, I live up here in Massachusetts and we recently bought a house and my address is actually now available to anyone to see because it's part of the public record and it's available online. So that is, some would say, well, that's private information, but it's a, you know, government contract when you go through and you make this, you know, deal to buy your house. So not to say with the government in the sense that it's a public record. So When we think about data and what the government may have, we also have to understand that if you can physically go down to City Hall and get this information, then it's part of the public record. So it's also understanding what the public record is and just being able to access it to not have to physically go, you know, during the hours of 9 to 5, leave your job and go find this information or file a request for a permit. So the information that the government has, a lot of it is aggregated. So it's not necessarily personally identifiable. But at the same time, what we're seeing are government agencies choosing to use the cloud privately. So what they'll do is they'll just share information within their own agency, people with the security clearance needed to access and distribute this information. And then when you have a project such as NASA and their Be a Martian project, that is a consumer-facing or public-facing project. So that goes on a different cloud. And, you know, it's understandable that not everything is going to be in the cloud. Not everything is fit for public consumption. So what we're just trying to say is that cloud computing is just one way to make your agency just more efficient. And believe it or not, we're kind of all using it anyway when you purchase things online or you use different online document systems. You are actually using stuff in the cloud, and you may not even notice.